Section 14.5, for a period of 10 years after enactment of this act, a regional cooperation shall be afforded the opportunity to review and render advice. Get that. Render advice to the village corporations on all land sales, leases, or other transactions prior to any final commitment. D, the secretary shall apply the rule of approximation with respect to the acreage limitation contained there in this section. Here you have where in our area, Sea Alaska grabbed all those lands when they knew before we did that that money was sitting there, $50 million in escrow funds sitting in the Heidelberg withdrawn area. At first, the Forest Service, when I went to them, interpreted that law to mean, that is before this amendment came out, that only the area that we picked was to be considered as an area where the escrow fund would reside. So at that time, they sent a man to Washington, D.C., the head man, Green, in Ketchikan, and he phoned back. They called me down to the office, and they said, we have been instructed by the Agriculture Department, who has authority over forests and national forests, that we are to put together every cent that has been taken out of the withdrawn area. There's 10 town sites, and out of that, Sea Alaska grabbed so much that we ran 15,000 acres short. So those are the things we should arbitrate in court. I think Kloak is the same way, Craig's the same way. They all said, when we start the action, we will work together in harmony, not to fight each other in court, because that's what the public and the Department of Interior wants, to see us fighting each other. There is a grave need to apply the law of equal protection in this area, and it calls for the regions and villages to cooperate in asking for an amendment to Section 2A1 of D2 during the period of the appropriate withdrawal for selection pursuant to the Settlement Act. Any and all proceeds derived from contracts, leases, licenses, permits, right-of-ways, or easements, or from trespass occurring after the date of withdrawal of lands for sections pertaining to lands to be selected under the Settlement Act shall be deposited in an escrow account which shall be held by the Secretary until land selections pursuant to this Act have been conveyed to selecting corporation or individual entitled to receive benefits under this Act. This may never happen by 1991. The Department of Interior is still mapping out areas to convey to the different villages, and it's going to take a long time. Now, the publication has not as yet been carried out. The statement of the President on Indian policy tends to verify the contents of this semi-brief, which I hope to publish in the Tundra Times, to help in the meeting to be held March 10th, 11th, 1982. The publication has not yet been carried out. Additions are included and excerpts from the Indigenous North America and Contemporary Law. All people have the right of self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. That applies to all natives in Alaska. All people may, for their own ends, freely dispose of their natural wealth and resources without prejudice to the obligation arising out of international economic cooperation based upon the principle of mutual benefit and international law. In no case may a person be deprived of his means of subsistence. The United States and Canada do not recognize sovereign tribes, but the United States adheres to the foreign sovereign between whom the United States a treaty has been made, has a right to expect and require its stipulation to be kept with scrupulous good faith. But through what internal arrangement this shall be done is exclusively for the consideration of the United States. We are grateful to answer Governor Bill Sheffield's request in June 1983 for the Tlingit Haida. This is signed by the National Indian Council of the Aging, of which I'm a board member, the UTA, that is United Tribes of Alaska, and at that time a board member of Heidelberg. So that is about what I think should cover about everything. This here is more incidental, or I might be of interest. This was published in the Ketchikan paper. This article was for the meeting in Hawaii, which I was going to attend, sponsored by the United Nations. And we do plan yet to go to Switzerland this spring. I returned back from that meeting because they asked me to help form the United Tribes of Alaska, and I thought that that is more important than what is stated here in the United Nations, because we as indigenous people are already recognized as members of the UN. For a meeting United Nations sponsored in Hawaii, we based our claims on land ownership on the Organic Act of May 17, 1984, because it stems from a treaty agreement and remains the supreme law of the United States government. What concepts we have of international law is quite brief. However, our main knowledge is that we are an indigenous people whose language has been traced back 10,000 years as distinctive of all others. Our story, as it compares with other indigenous tribes, recites the story of the flood of biblical history. We anchored our rafts on the highest mountain, which is Copper Mountain, and when the waters receded, we were taken by churning waters to what is now Graham Island in Canada. The Tlingit Nation had a similar story in which they stated that they too anchored on the highest peak on Admiralty Island. These stories are referred to bolster the land ownership of these two separate nations, which were given the jurisdictional act by the United States to sue in their court for the illegal taking of lands claimed by the Tlingit and Haida nations and the failure of the United States to protect said lands in 1909 when Tongass National Forest was set up. This case was won by these two tribes. After 40 years being interrupted by World War II with a settlement of $7,500,000. Over centuries of time, the Haidas remained on Graham Island till about 400 years ago when a segment of the Haida Nation decided to return to their original land, which they could see on a clearer day over an expanse of water. They accomplished this by making huge rafts, 28 of them. This migration was caused by a fish famine on Graham Island, and a feud resulted from children popping with their bows and arrows, dogfish kidney hung in the trees to dry for a food supplement. The Court of Claims in the trial states that the Haidas pressed in on the Tlingits. No major wars ever took place, but because of the accidental killing of a Tlingit by a Haida, a boundary was agreed on approximating just over 1 million acres south, bisecting the Tawak land to Cape Shaken. That should be Tawak Lake, to Cape Shaken. In closing on our inherent sovereignty, I wish to express from the Haida Nation's position on the Alaskan Land Settlement 1971. Justice comes from God, but could we receive it from so lofty a source, we would need neither government nor laws. We, as native citizens of the greatest sovereign nation on earth, can assure history and our posterity that we are asking justice in our right, not as an agreement between a superior and an inferior, but as a body equal with each of its members, as guaranteed by human rights. As an attendee of this meeting in Honolulu, Hawaii, I feel it is an honor to share our nation's experience with other representatives of indigenous people. My presentation to the Alaskan Native Land Settlement is the only position taken represented by a land-owning group. For immediate release in 1983 is a fact sheet by President Reagan, also a commission set up by the executive order. The most significant is a part of the Indian policy statement that Indian tribes are tribal governments because they retain all aspects of their original sovereignty, not otherwise given up or taken away by Congress. During the process of the Tlingit and Haida case in the Court of Claims in 1945, we were given the opportunity to prove in federal court our Aboriginal rights to fishing, hunting, basketry, and land ownership in southeastern Alaska. This action was required because the United States cannot pay for the taking of land or the failure to protect such lands that come under the jurisdiction of the United States as it relates to the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution. The United States must pay for said property right if taken or destroyed. Only the land was compensated for at 32 cents an acre, so that our fisheries and all other property rights remain intact. Our experience in the Indian Reorganization Act has given us many years of economic development in our fisheries, and now with the acquisition of 24,000 acres of timberland, we intend to develop IRA for tribal government. After 50 years or so of being in the state of pupillage, it is my considered belief that we will decide our own course as to our destiny. In 1991, our lands will become fee simple. This has been compared to action taken by the United States government where enactment of the Dawes Act to benefit the railroads, the Termination Act, and now the Alaska Native Land Settlement Act for the benefit of the oil companies. The settlement of 30 million acres in southeastern Alaska was so the lumber companies could begin timber harvesting and was considered an economic move for the benefit of the general public, including the indigenous people who lived in this area for time immemorial. The lawyers we have now are adamant that placing our lands under cooperation laws is a conspiracy. This view is also expressed in the Haida Nation position. We did not agree that our tribe should be placed under the domination of any tribe or nation, including the United States. We are asking studies now to retain our lands under self-determination and IRA laws. Ethnic pride seems to be the prerequisite of all people who work together in the sole interest of an indigenous people. So to this end, we pray to Nong Kilslas, the supreme being. I might add that the letter to President Reagan brings in this Nong Kilslas. That is the name we gave to the supreme being. We never prayed to the supreme being. We didn't know anything about religion. It was more of a social thing. But he was so powerful that we never prayed. We never prayed in the dinners that we had. All we did was after we got through eating, we let out a big belch, as you folks know, an Indian sign of satisfaction. See, and we'd praise the meal that we were eating, the deer or the birds and all that. That's the way we had of pacifying the spirit or the spirit of the fish or deer that we were eating. So I'm going to give this to Mr. Berger because this gives everything that I figure is pertinent to this question, Heidelberg position on Native Land Settlement Act.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Haltin.
Is there anything you have this amendment? I had this amendment, but I've been sending it out. I wasn't going to give it to one to Tlaloc and one to Craig. Who's from Tlaloc? Nobody from Tlaloc? Yeah, this is an amendment, you know, that's the most important thing. And Craig? Nobody here from Craig. I'll give it to him when I go down there tonight, I think.
Excuse
the president.
Yeah, you. Just see that. He's well known throughout Alaska, and I really enjoyed your presentation.
Yeah, I've been asked, you know, and first time I've had a chance to show that the study I've done was this document I have here. Forgot about it. That actually gives me the right, you know, for paralegal assistance. That is, I can assist the different tribes or anyone that needs help. And I'd be willing to help any person, especially the cooperation. Now we'll make way for another.
Sure.
Yes. Oh, I think that's a good idea. Five-minute break.
I'm glad I.
Well, maybe we could start again and allow a few others to speak before 5 o'clock. I think the people from Heidelberg, some of them are returning at five. So.
Okay, my name is Adrian LaCornu, and I have the honor of serving as the city administrator for the city of Heidelberg. I'm also the vice president of the Heidelberg Cooperative Association and have spent 3 years on the Heidelberg City School Board. I had hoped to organize this thing so it would be a little easier. And I'm not really sure how this will turn out. What I thought I could explain would be some attempts at explaining Heidelberg's position as far as the role of the municipal government. Now there's a quote here that I'd like to read because it's not related to Indian law particularly or any other thing, but it does explain what possibly the conception of some people, their conception of what a government is or what the laws and how they relate or the implications of laws and how they impact lives. I'll read the quote. It says, "All shapelessness whose kind admits of pattern and form, as long as it remains outside of reason and idea, is ugly by that very isolation from the divine thought. And this is the absolute ugly. An ugly thing is something that has not been entirely mastered by pattern, that is, by reason, the matter not yielding at all points and in all respects to the ideal form. But where the ideal form has entered, it has grouped and coordinated what from a diversity of parts was to become a unity. It has rallied confusion into cooperation. It has made the sum one harmonious coherence, for the idea is a unity, and what it molds must come to unity as far as multiplicity may. In using that reference, I mean to say that the layers of laws and the legal framework of our society is not always comprehensible to the average person. Heidelberg is a community that pre-existed the law in the state of Alaska, and it's been busy catching up ever since because the whims of various administrations have changed, and as a result, the community has been forced to adjust to those changes. And I came to work for the city of Heidelberg in December of 1980. And at that time, the city began work on the Heidelberg Coastal Management Program, which was the Coastal Management Program is basically a habitat protection law. But it does provide, within the existing statutes, an opportunity for the community to voice its concerns about an area that has been traditionally and customarily important to the people. Now, as a footnote to some of the things that Woody Morrison had said in explaining more or less the background and the history and the fluctuations of our boundaries. In 1911 or 1912, President Taft set up the Heidelberg Indian Reserve of 7,866 acres. And in 1926, Calvin Coolidge rescinded that or reversed that and reduced it to a school reserve of 1.46 acres. And then again, and it was in 1927 that the Congress decided that no longer could a president reduce the size of a reserve without an act of Congress. But by then, in 1927, they had already established Heidelberg at its present area of 189 acres. So during the IRA period, The legislation provided for setting up reservations for the economic benefit of the tribe. Heidelberg petitioned for an area of approximately 990,000 acres of land and went through a series of hearings throughout the 40s, and it was determined in 46 that the natives of Heidelberg were entitled to 8% of their request, or 101,000 acres. And as was stated earlier, that was taken care of by Judge Folta in the Libby McNeil Libby case. The Heidelberg Coastal Zone Management Program set up an area generally approximating the identical area described in the petition for an IRA reserve. Now, the purposes of setting up that area that large, and it was described by the state as an ambitious undertaking, was because that has always been important, and what occurs within that area, which is easily defined as an ecosystem because it's cut off in a narrow pass and it opens out to Dixon Entrance. So it's a very easily a single habitat, and anything affected, any developments that would debilitate or tear up one part would affect all of it. So we went through the process as described in the statute and in the administrative code to set up this area and have it recognized as important to the people. In our final phase for approval of going through the Coastal Policy Council, it was argued that we were going for extraterritorial planning powers, and that was beyond the scope of the coastal management program. In looking at how we put together the plan and the procedures we went through for public participation and whatnot, it was recognized that we jumped through all the hoops that were required by the statute. And many people on the council felt that we didn't transgress any laws, we didn't use anything outside the laws. And so they gave us a formal acknowledgement, which really doesn't amount to that much. But I do feel that it was a step in the right direction, that it is perhaps the first time that an area that has been important to a community the size of Heidelberg had at least acknowledged their former claim and the present significance of that area. In relating that to, say, Alaska Claim Settlement Act, I would say that the problems with Alaska Claim Settlement Act is that it never addressed the communities per se. The communities have always been more or less an afterthought. The village corporations are significant, but I don't feel that they are the greatest part of the claims, because they really didn't establish the needed form for the discussion of a future beyond economic principles. The situation of taking the coastal management program, well, let's see. What I feel the Alaska Claim Settlement Act should have addressed was the life of these communities, the survival of them economically, socially, and culturally. To trade your identity for the anonymity of being a shareholder in a corporation is never going to provide a sound basis for future development of the residents' purpose within the community. There is at no point in the act that I feel that the Alaska Claim Settlement Act has gone out of its way to benefit the communities in the long term. When they set up the corporations, and the regional corporations particularly, Sea Alaska has about 60% of its land selections within the Heidelberg area. And that's why it's of critical value to the regional corporation. Now, during the Coastal Zone Management Program, we had some initial uneasiness on behalf of the Sea Alaska leadership that we were trying to establish another layer of bureaucracy that would hinder their developments. And the seemingly opposition between native groups in that respect is put out of focus when we are struggling for our survival as a community, and Sea Alaska has such a large number of shareholders that they feel that Heidelberg will eventually benefit from whatever Sea Alaska does in the area. But the majority of Sea Alaska shareholders aren't from Heidelberg, and nor are they concerned with the daily affairs of our community. I'm sure that they're sensitive to a point, but when economics dictate, the concerns of the community aren't always foremost in their mind. At some point and some time, the communities need to become the beneficiaries of this Claim Settlement Act. I believe that the problems in Alaska generally and the problems with the Claim Settlement Act are related in that we still have 200 and something villages throughout Alaska taking up approximately 75% of the land area, or they're out in this unorganized borough. The unorganized borough is without the power to legislate taxes, without jurisdiction to zone areas that are significant and important to the people. There's no means to bend the arms of the developer to get them to recognize the community's needs to participate in that development within an area that we will get the impacts one way or the other, but we have no way of responding to those impacts other than the depending on who is in the administration or who would be sensitive and an active voice in the situation. I use that quote at the beginning, I guess I'm trying to say that we're coming to know each thing. And some people are surprised that a person working for a village of the size of Heidelberg should have to work full-time. They feel it would be a part-time job. I feel we have the same problems that the larger communities have with the smaller smaller staff and less assistance. In this ex-party Crow Dog, they have a quote in here I thought it was particularly close to the situation as that we're growing out of. And that's a community separated by race, by tradition, by the instincts of a free and though savage life, from the authority and power which seeks to impose upon them the restraints of an external and unknown code, and to subject them to the responsibilities of civil conduct according to rules and penalties of which they could have no previous warning, which judges them by standards made by others and not for them, which should accept them from its exactions and makes now allowances for their inability to understand it. It tries them not by their peers, nor by their customs of their people, nor by the law of their land, but by superiors of a different race, according to laws of a social state of which they have an imperfect conception, which is opposed to their traditions of their history, to the habits of their lives, and to the strongest prejudice of their savage nature, one which measures the red man's revenge by the maxims of the white man's morality. The point there is that now the state is anxious to make us welcome members of the municipal families throughout Alaska. And they're hoping that we can get our act together in the sense that we can control our young people from rebelling against the problems of local hire, the long periods of unemployment, the inability to obtain the educational resources to make a way through the developments that are occurring now. And at the same time, the state is hoping that we can all come together on subsistence and other issues. But the thing that they don't see is that the people of Heidelberg have been a group of families living together for at least hundreds of years, and they have gotten along well, and they have seen governments and administrations come and go. They've seen alcoholism programs come in every now and then with novel ideas and seemingly workable solutions, and then they're gone. Nothing is permanent, you know. All that is solid melts in the air, kind of thing. And they don't have any faith in any external government. And I'd hope to be organized for this, but I'm not. The point is, I guess, is that there's a need to develop local governments in a true sense that permanence is within the people in the community and not within any given administration or within any given law. And the point of government being sensitive to the natives or not is not really the question. Local control and local government have to do with organizing a solid foundation within the community for their own purposes in order to survive and live reasonably well within an area that is rich. That's one of the ironies of this Alaska Claims Settlement Act. Although we live in a rich area, 60% of Sea Alaska's selection is in our area. That's no coincidence. They did the research and found out where the majority of the minerals and the timber and the fisheries. So we're not a poor people necessarily. We're a poor people because we don't have a strong government, one that we could exercise taxing authority, zoning authority within that area. The questions of sovereignty have always puzzled me, particularly because of the general nature of their discussions, is that they don't describe the practicalities of how should a small community such as Heidelberg become self-sufficient. The means are at hand. It's just getting a hold of it without it getting wrenched from you from a larger group of people who have other interests. The majority, the case of Libby McNeil Libby, that's an interesting case because those were an absentee user of an area exerting power and influence over a community who had no conception of what they're dealing with. Well, I'm not going to say that they didn't have a conception of, but they didn't have the wherewithal to contend with somebody who is so well established within a larger community and who theoretically benefits a larger mass than this small community of Heidelberg. The unfairness of the act, I think, also could be some similar to what Chief Joseph says in 1879, this North American Review, says, suppose a white man should come to me and say, Joseph, I like your horses, I want to buy them. I say to him, no, my horses suit me, I will not sell them. Then he goes to my neighbor and says to him, Joseph has some good horses. I want to buy them, but he refuses to sell them. My neighbor answers, pay me the money and I'll sell you Joseph's horses. The white man returns to me and says, Joseph, I have bought your horses and you must let me have them. He said, if we sold our land that's to the government, this is the way it happened. Now, that's not necessarily exact. I'm sure there was participation by many reasonable people. But the majority of people are struggling day to day to feed themselves. That's one of the reasons perhaps there's not as many people as could be here, you know. And the situation is chaotic. There's no way that we can draw the community together when you have various federal, state, and private agencies dictating to the community in a benign sense, but with no real permanence. It's not a grassroots thing. It's just something that is grafted upon the community from time to time to patch up sore spots. To take, for instance, we deal with the state of Alaska and the city as a municipality. We also deal with Tlingit and Haida Central Council. We deal with Southeast Regional Health Corporation. We have political dealings with Sea Alaska Corporation through this coastal management program, and Clequan Corporation from Haines. We deal with the state agencies like Environmental Conservation, Department of Fish and Game, the Board of Fisheries. Then we have other groups within the community that also handle things. We got the school district. All of them have their own mandates according to their bylaws. And nowhere in those bylaws do they say there's a need to cooperate with any other agency. And although many times we have the same membership, or give or take four or five different boards, that there's many of the same members, but they're not obligated to discuss common issues, and they're to remain within their realm of authority, and it's necessarily limited. There's no real broad-based community organization that could act as a clearinghouse for what goes on in the community. At any given time, any one of those groups could be involved with on a state or even a federal level for grants or programs that another group may not even know about. This hasn't happened a whole lot, but it does happen, and it does work against the common goals of the community. They haven't always been it hasn't always been a streamlined method of dealing with the problems. Another thing that we're dealing with in Heidelberg is we hope to do a legal analysis of some of these problems, to do an institutional analysis of these various groups and see whether these groups can be coordinated towards a common goal. Another area of this legal analysis is proposing that we find some means to gain political control of this coastal management program planning area, that million acres of land. In discussing it with the state, we have petitioned the state for what they call a coastal resource service area. And in that, the legislation is written such that they would divide these regional education attendance areas into no more than three units. Now there's two REAAs, as they're referred to, regional education attendance areas in Southeast. And they would we submitted our proposal, but we didn't want a large area. We just wanted to get that area that's been important to the community, and we had hoped that we could work with Kasan, another Haida village, and just take the southern half of the Prince of Wales Island. Now it's kind of a deal where a lot of people, myself included, are wondering what we're getting ourselves into, if it would be worth it to pursue that for what it really gives to us. The coastal management program, as I said, was mostly a habitat protection. During the coastal management program, we had developed policies for this larger management policies for the larger planning area that we came into direct confrontation with the State Board of Fisheries, in that they made it clear to us that the coastal policy program is strictly a habitat protection program and has nothing to do with resource allocation. Our confusion in that regard was that we had felt that Anilka was somehow related to the Alaska Coastal Management Program, in that it would give priority to subsistence use. So our coastal management program is also unique in the state, in that we've nominated six areas meriting special attention, which are completely outside our city municipal boundaries. So, but in designating them, that we would have great weight in these six areas when development conflicts with the habitat protection or the subsistence use. But it's little more than a little more than they'll listen to our comments, and if they decide, they're not compelled to take our advice, but they said that they would. We had originally thought of doing the entire 1 million acres of land as one area meriting special attention. But in that respect, you would have to do a resource inventory, and it would cost more funds than were available. So it's something that the community, I believe, will continue to work towards because of the people's understanding of the changes in governments that are outside areas. Government by Juneau would never be absolutely sensitive to the needs of the community. And I don't believe that the state is receptive to some of these issues, because they believe that we are trying to set up an exclusionary society where we would exclude everybody. But what we're telling them is that we don't care who lives here, but we want to establish the standards. We want to establish the rules and the regulations that they would have to abide by. And although they don't necessarily argue the point, they have been very lax or lackadaisical about pursuing our Coastal Resource Service area or discussing other forms of local government. They only talk of boroughs and the unorganized borough. The unorganized borough is controlled by the legislature. The legislature sits as the assembly or the city council for the unorganized borough. The legislature is composed of over 60% urban legislators who have a very divergent view of what life in the unorganized borough should be. And it is not entirely fair to the people in the smaller communities to have to compete with Anchorage or Fairbanks or Ketchikan for assistance from the state in developing community infrastructure. Nowadays, they make it seem that we're doing rather well. The city of Heidelberg has recently completed nearly a $3 million gymnasium, and we're spending, in the next year, we'll spend approximately $3 million on a new water system. And I get the impression that many people in the state would feel that we wouldn't be as well off if we had to go it alone. But there's millions and millions of dollars of timber going out of this area that we don't get a return on except in the form of municipal grants or program funding. And we have no control over we don't have discretionary control over much of those funds. They have to spend it for what is specified in the law. We have a lot of needs that come up from time to time that are urgent that would require some other source of funding. And I don't really believe that the communities here in Southeastern should be as poor as they are made to be. And if we did have a regional government of some kind, the state is not very sensitive to the needs of the community for the most part, because many people in the state are not concerned with the history and development of the state. I believe this is a historic time in Alaska, the opportunity to develop these cultures without the paranoia that we're still savages. It's a confusing time, like as I said, and it's. I got another quote here that I thought might describe some of the things, but for the rest, it is not difficult to see that our epoch is a birth time, a period of transition. The spirit of man has broken with the old order of things hitherto prevailing, and with the old ways of thinking, and it is of the mind to let them sink into the depths of the path and to set about its own transformation. But it is here, as in the case of the birth of a child, after a long period of nutrition and silence, the continuity of the gradual growth and size of quantitative change is suddenly cut short by the first breath drawn. There is a break in the process, a qualitative change, and the child is born. In like manner, the spirit of the time, growing slowly and quietly, ripe for a new form it is to assume, disintegrates one fragment after another of the structure of its previous world. That it is tottering to its fall is indicated by symptoms here and there, frivolity and again ennui, which are spreading in the established order of things, the undefined foreboding of something unknown. All these things betoken that there is something else approaching, this gradual crumbling to pieces which did not alter the general look and aspect of the whole, is interrupted by the sunrise, which in a flash and at a single stroke brings to view the form and the structure of the new world. But this new world is perfectly realized just as little as a newborn child, and it is essential to bear this in mind. It comes on the stage to begin with in its immediacy and its bare generality. A building is not finished when its foundation is laid, and just as little is the attainment of a general notion of the whole itself. When we want to see an oak tree in all its vigor of trunk, its spreading branches, and massive foliage, we are not satisfied to be shown an acorn. And in that, I just think that there is so much potential in Alaska for the future possibilities of native communities, that maybe this confusion and this chaos will weld the communities together. Maybe it'll take something more serious than what's happening now. I was going to point to the one thing here. This would have been clearer if I had wrote it out. I think I said most of the things here, but I think there's a lot of things we need to do in the communities to get the thing rolling. And for the most part, it has to do with communicating with one another. And I like to say that a lot of times, and it is probably the most difficult time to discuss issues such as unemployment and why people can't get jobs and why there seems to be so much activity with so little on behalf of community members. And it's a frightening kind of look into the future when many times the jobs that are available, such as the development of the Heidelberg Road or the logging that occurs in the area, the people of the community aren't loggers. They have no history of logging per se as a in the present tense. People within the community, there have been people who have logged throughout the history of Heidelberg, but it hasn't been the dominant thing. There's no glory in it, or there's a lot of reasons why people don't want to participate. But if we could work towards this, what they call the trust relationship and the government's responsibility to educate the people, I don't think we would be as bad off as we are. We're given to take the things of the government as charity and not as a trade-off for what they've taken. And I think that's a very essential point. It's that there's no pride in charity. And when the people ask for their just desserts, a lot of people don't understand what it is. But just as the Mellons and the Rockefellers have had their heritage and had it handed down to them, so too the people of this island deserve their heritage. And this is a rich island. This is making many millionaires here. And there's not very many natives involved in that. Now, I'm not saying that we should go hog wild on the private enterprise, but I think that people should realize that the people aren't ripping anybody off, and they're not out to conquer the world, that they're asking for the simple acceptance of a fact that they at one time were the unchallenged owners of this area. And there is no need for them to be poor nor humble in their aspirations. And I think the Alaska Claim Settlement Act has failed in that the leaders are largely urban-based, and they are insensitive to the daily needs of the community. When the community's needs come into conflict with their economic goals, and that's something that will take a whole lot of hashing out between the corporations and the city. Now, as Woodrow had pointed out earlier, that he would like to see the abolition or the abolishment of the municipality.
Well, you work for them. How do you feel about it?
Well, my point on that is that people have come to expect governments to do certain things, and so in my eyes that in fact we are a Native government. The majority of the council is Native. The people that run the day-to-day operations of the city are Native. So if we can develop a good government, it wouldn't matter. The point that I would like to make is that the one that provides the most autonomy, Article 10 of the state constitution provides for maximum home rule for communities. The federal government is telling communities that you got the Self-Determination Act and the IRA Act to provide for your own self-sufficiency. Well, they all seem to be a form of lip service when the actual tools to sink your teeth into the assets within this area for governmental purposes is not there. We have to go to the state, or we have to go to Tlingit and Haida. It's not local control, and it's not self-government. And I guess because the area is so rich, is that a lot of people would not want us to have that control. I was going to say that as a footnote to what Woody was saying earlier about the creation of Heidelberg, and I just thought I'd add this one little note here, that it hasn't always been a straightforward world that we've been contending with, as the people of Heidelberg have come to know. I had an opportunity to go to the National Archives in Washington, D.C. last fall.